Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, it is about time for the season to start. And as Tara Reid says, on my way to Atlantic City for my early Halloween party, got a cool costume. It's tomorrow night. I'll take pics and show you. I hope you all have fun.
Your vocal inflection on these is my favorite part of it.
Well, she doesn't include punctuation, so I never know what to do. There's always an exclamation point at the end, but before that, I don't know what to, I don't know where to stop. I don't know where to pause.
Maybe you should write a letter. You should write her a letter.
I bet she takes letters.
Before we get started, I have to ask you something.
Yes.
Are you a breakfast burrito guy?
Oh, yeah.
I just have one. I don't really know why I eat anything else.
That's an excellent question.
I eat one and then I'm like, that was amazing. I don't know, why would I not just eat this all the time?
Well, there are a couple of keys to the breakfast burrito. The eggs cannot be dry. Dry eggs will destroy a breakfast burrito. You can usually get past that by throwing some good cheese in there. But if the eggs are dry, it will destroy your breakfast burrito. You need crispy pieces of bacon, not strips. You end up pulling one out and it's awkward. You need like it chopped up. You need a little bit of salsa, a little kick to it, maybe a little hot sauce in there. You can get fancy and throw some beans if you want. You can throw some guacamole, but those are the essentials. You've got to have that. And it's got to be a good flour tortilla. It's a really good flour tortilla. Not that like the cheapest one you can find in the store. It's got to be a good one.
Yeah, it really needs to be a quality one. It's weird. I never really, when I was growing up, my parents, for whatever reason, they just never. Salsa on eggs was a new concept to me until I moved to Texas.
Okay.
And if any of you live in a place where you don't do this, just have your eggs with salsa all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It is genuinely amazing. You know what else is amazing?
The NBA season.
It's here.
Don't worry. I'm going to edit this out. I'm stoked.
You go from 0 to 60. You like waited until the last possible moment, and now you're like, "Bazinga! This is amazing."
I know. I don't know. I'm a basketball nerd, as we have all established. As are you. I love it, and I'm excited for games that matter. I'm excited to watch basketball, and I'm excited to like try to learn more from what we watch this season.
Yeah, and I'm excited to find those teams that – there's always a couple of teams. Last year it was the Bucks, those teams that aren't really all that good but that I really enjoy watching.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to find out who that is because it's never who I think it's going to be.
There's always a surprise one.
Yeah, it's always – and it's not, again, it's not like, oh, they're much better than you expect. It's like, no, they're decent, but I just enjoy watching them. There's something about them that I really enjoy just sitting down on a Wednesday night and checking out. We'll do games tomorrow. We're still wrapping up some of our preseason stuff today. We went whole hog today on preseason stuff. So
the entire hog, the absolute entire hog.
Yeah, we have nothing. I don't think we have anything left to cover. We've got division previews, awards predictions, playoff predictions, which none of us have any clue about. We've got a whole big thing on LeBron and free agency, a primer talking about why this matters, why you should care, what could happen. The teams that are involved and what their best pitches are going to be for him, how this is going to play out as a narrative. We've got division previews. We finished up today with the Southeast and the Pacific. You've got tons of stuff to digest from us, and it's all in our usual snarky, very stylistic voice. So please go check it out. There's some good stuff over there at cbssports.com/NBA.
I got to say the LeBron Decision 2.0 primer we did with the roundtable. I got really excited about my idea for the last question of like, hey, what's a bold prediction or, you know, whatever the hell the question was. I don't really remember, which is great marketing. But it was like, come up with a bold prediction of what we don't expect to happen. And I started going through like, what if everyone's like, oh, if he's going to go somewhere, it's going to be the Lakers because it's the Lakers tradition, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what about the Celtics tradition? What if he just didn't opt out? In 2015, he was like, all right, Boston, I'm going to come to you because you guys hate me, and I'm going to make you love me, and I'm going to make the Lakers fans hate me even more.
I actually think that's a brilliant idea. I love this idea of him taking over empires. I have something similar in that he goes to New York and basically – because you know how you have – Chuck Klosterman talks about this with his arch enemy versus nemesis thing, where one of them is a friend that you have a constant competition with. And I love the idea of him going to Melo and being like, well, I can help you. but you're going to have to say please. Like, the only thing I like better than that is him going to – I talked about this with him going to Kobe and saying that, being like, do you really want to win number six? How badly do you want to win number six? Because if you sit there right now and say, I need you, please, maybe I'll come. Like, I think this will be I really want him to. I really want him to. He's not nearly as much of a bad guy
right.
as people made him out to be for 2 years. But I would love for him to be a total reporter about this to both Melo and to anybody, really, to the Celtics, too, to just be like, to totally force that. I love the idea of him going to New York, but only if KG resigns with the Nets for another year.
Okay. I like that.
I want him to bury KG, to be like, no. Like, I'm moving into your neighborhood just to ruin the end of your career.
I'm going to bring you back as a ghost just so I can ghost bust you.
Exactly.
I just love the idea of him deciding, all right, I'm this good. I'm an all-time great. What can I possibly do? I know, I'll just troll the fan bases that have been the meanest to me by signing with them. I'm going to make them like me.
Yeah, Chicago was another one I thought about, where Derrick Rose is like, I'm not going to ask for help. I don't do that. I would love for him, for Rose to like really struggle this season. Not really struggle, but for them to lose again in the playoffs, and then for LeBron to be like, do you want my help? Because all you have to do is ask. All you got to do is ask. That's all you got
to
do.
I think it's safe to say that the classic board game of if Zach was an NBA legend, what would he do? It would just be troll fans all the time.
Exactly. You would be merciless too.
Oh, like, my God. It would be like if J.R. Smith was a great player.
Knicks fans would love Paul Pierce next to you.
You think I'm insufferable now. Imagine me with success.
You wouldn't just block the mascot shot in Denver. You'd somehow take money. You wouldn't just block them getting free queso. You would somehow like spoil all of their Mexican food for a week.
I'd buy out the concession stands and light it on fire every game.
Exactly. So speaking of LeBron.
Yes.
We did our award predictions today.
We did.
And I think I am the only one that has LeBron winning his fourth consecutive or his fifth total MVP, third consecutive.
Yeah. It's my annual pick Kevin Durant for MVP until he wins it, which is just a tradition of mine. It's 3 years running now, and I figure he's going to win one eventually.
It's great. You're from California, Minnesota, and Royce Young's in Oklahoma, and yet this is a tradition that you both share.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, he's got to win one eventually. Let's 1 year we're going to be right, and I'm going to shove it in everybody's face.
He's a popular pick. David Aldridge of TNT has him. A lot of people have him.
Yeah.
I have this theory that – and this – I do baseline awards, so I spend way too much time on these awards, which are – I had to basically decide what I was going to do when I started doing this professionally. You can do two things with the awards. You could say, well, the entire process is completely flawed and it's an arbitrary award. Why would I care about it? Or you can say, well, it's a completely arbitrary award and nothing about it makes sense. Why don't I spend a lot of time trying to figure it out because I have to deal with it anyway? I chose the latter. As with most things that don't matter, I decided to overthink them.
Sure.
So I spent a lot of time thinking about MVP and how the voting is done and how terrible it is. And I have my own ideas, which I'll be rehashing for the millionth time this season. But when I was thinking about LeBron, the biggest argument is voter fatigue, that people are going to say, you know, we get into him so many times. It's really time for somebody else. He doesn't need another one. The end. But I feel like because there's actually such a discussion about it and the internet is part of this, it makes everyone so aware of that concept. I almost feel like voter fatigue, you can't have voter fatigue and really opt into it. A few guys will. Washburn from the Post, because he voted for Melo last year, which was, you know, yeah, he might do that. I could see that happening. I don't necessarily think a lot of the voters' makeups are going to go that route because of the awareness of it, and they're going to want to recognize how good LeBron is, because putting him at five, he's already in rare company. Five puts him in, I think there's only a handful, like three or four guys that have done that.
Yeah, I think there's voter fatigue, and it's a real thing. But it's not like this, oh, they're just going to decide LeBron doesn't deserve it this year. I think everyone's going to recognize that he'll deserve it, and I think that a way to get around that is to say, hey, he's the defensive player of the year. You know, that's an honor we haven't given him yet. That's something we can do while recognizing Kevin Durant. And honestly, I think Kevin Durant's going to deserve a share of it. Which you and I have talked about this before, like, he deserved a share of it last year. If he had ended up with the most points per game, even though he ended up being the scoring leader on 50-40-90, like, that's hard to ignore, I think. And I think that as long as he is putting up the kind of numbers he is, and Oklahoma City is a success, and especially this year with Westbrook's injury to start the year, if they're successful, I think people are going to look at that as a really big deal. And so that was kind of my thinking. It's not that, oh, people aren't going to want to give it to LeBron. It's just I think they're going to want to give it to Durant.
I have a little – I'm starting to get a little concerned about the Thunder. And I had the Thunder really high a couple weeks ago before the Westbrook injury. And it wasn't necessarily just the Westbrook injury because he's only out 4-6. It was just that Westbrook's injury made me realize how delicate they really are. Yes. Without Harden. And I don't like to rehash that trade. I think it was like that happened. To me, it's more like an act of God. You know, like the act of God was James Harden wanted to get paid. Good
right.
for him.
But yeah.
That has impacts on small markets, and you can like it or dislike it or say whatever, but it's done and it's over. but their structure is so fragile. And I'm reading this morning an article from the Oklahoman, an interview with Durant. He says, "I want to be the greatest. I want to be one of the greatest. I want to be." And when they redo that top 50 in the NBA, I want to be there. And I think he will. But he also talks about how last year he was, quote, obsessed with winning. It was really like, every single shot was killing him.
Yeah.
He actually pointed to how that was part of why he started picking up technicals, was he was so into every single moment he couldn't stand these calls because it was everything was related to if I miss a shot here, I'm going to miss it in the finals. If our defense is bad now, it's going to be bad in the finals. And he never got there. And he said, I kind of got to peel back on that because I was so unhappy and I've got to get back to just having fun. And part of me is like, last season was maybe your best season. This is not to say that I think he'll get worse. It's just that I think it's going to be difficult for the Thunder to win enough games for him to win MVP because he would have to be Jordan. That's what he'd have to be.
Here's my response to that is if he can – his skills are his skills, and I think that you can have that mentality, but when you bring about a sense of calm and perspective on everything, which it sounds like he's kind of trying to do, we saw that with LeBron James 2 years ago. And I'm not saying he's going to be LeBron James or anything, but we saw that in the fact that LeBron was so felt so much pressure because they came together, they lost to Dallas or whatever, and he kind of just decided, screw it. I'm just going to go back to enjoying this, right? I'm going to be myself. I'm going to be the player I am. I'm going to go back to enjoying this. Durant's kind of doing the Durant version of that, I feel like.
I would agree, except for the difference is how their games are made up. It's that LeBron is the all-around, does everything, makes everyone better kind of player.
KD's kind of going towards that, though.
You think? I still feel like he's the lethal. I mean, his assist numbers and everything else, I feel like, are mostly the product of he's so good. He's just going to accumulate numbers. Like, he's this magnet for statistics. They're just going to come, like, rambling in because he's the 7-foot freak of nature. 6'11", whatever it is. By the way, the other thing is when you said his skills are his skills, I thought of Gone in 60 Seconds with my favorite line, which is when the guy says, a brother's love is a brother's love. Which is one of my favorite lines in movie history. And I laugh every single time I watch it.
It's a great line. It's a great line. I'm watching Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning today. I'm very excited. I haven't seen it yet.
See, I set the bar at Gone in 60 Seconds, and you had to go under me. always have to go under.
Here's the thing. All right, here are Durant's numbers last year. 28 points, 7.9 rebounds, 4.6 assists.
That's good.
I really don't think that you luck into 4.6 assists. Not luck in, but like...
I'm not saying he lucks into it. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm saying that... How can I put this? I guess if the production is there, it doesn't matter. But I still feel like if I stylistically look at his game, I'm always going to look at him as a lethal scorer.
Sure.
That's what his game represents to me, which is odd because he's very much not a gunner. He's anti-gunning. I do wonder. I just want to see how this team works out. Maybe I had bet on he and Westbrook being so good that they could make up for anything, that they would just get better and that will cover up for anything. And now I'm not so sure. If they can win enough games, I could definitely see it happening. I still like LeBron from the perspective of, I just feel like he's going to make it known whenever he wants to. Because there were times last year when he would kind of coast for a couple games, and then there would just be this game where everyone was just like, wow, he's really good. Like, Durant made a couple of pushes a couple of times, and even after that 60% streak that LeBron went on, Durant made like a late run, and I forget which game it was, but LeBron just had some sort of absolutely absurd performance, and everyone's like, no, yeah, that's the MVP. And I wonder if that's going to be kind of part of it. Ken Berger's got Chris Paul, who I almost took.
Yeah, I like that pick. Here's a bold prediction for Kevin Durant this year. 20-10-5.
You think he's going to score only 20 points a game?
No, I'm saying he's getting at least 20-10-5. He's in that club. Maybe he's the only one that's 28-10-5 or whatever, but I think he's getting 10 rebounds a game. I think he's getting 5 assists a game, and I think maybe his percentages go down a little bit, but I don't think it'll matter.
I'd be awesome if he did that after LeBron disappointed me by not averaging a triple-double in 2011 because a completely unrealistic thing to expect out of being. I peel back on those kind of predictions, but I hope that he does do 28-10-5. If he did 30-10-5, oh god.
Oh, if he did 38-10-5, or if he did 30-10-5, yeah, I'd be lighting candles every night, putting the satin sheets on the bed.
I'd be building a small town. I'd
be doing some lunges to get limber.
Let's just stop this line.
Wait, no, now I got the vapors. Hold on, let me keep going.
The vapors. I got the vapors. So Chris Paul, I like from the perspective of, I feel like if there is voter fatigue, they're going to go with who hasn't gotten it that really deserves one.
Yeah, I do think if Chris Paul's going to get one, it probably has to be this year, maybe next year. But, you know, he doesn't have very many chances.
But of course, that means if that happens, that means that the Knicks had a really down year because the voters want to give Melo one.
I don't know about that. I feel like Melo's still pretty contentious.
I think he's divisive, but I think that a lot – because so much of the voting block is made up of traditionalists. It's really anybody that pays attention to efficiency that is kind of torn on him, right? If you're torn on Carmelo Anthony, it's because you looked at his efficiency. That's what ends up making a difference to you, because if you're just like – if you're old school and you just look at the raw percentages, because even then, like, I think traditionally defense hasn't mattered as much as I think it should, you know?
Yeah, probably not. I mean, immediately you can go to the Steve Nash MVPs. You can go to Dirk's MVP. I mean, Dirk wasn't a terrible defender by any means, but he's not someone you're like, oh, thank God he took over that game defensively.
Yeah, I mean, Shaq's defensive effort in some of the years he won was not terrific.
Yeah, well, that's the crazy thing about him is it was still good.
He was still a presence,
but it was just like, yeah, you could definitely look at games and be like, what? Why aren't you doing more?
Right.
Which
yeah.
is insane.
So, I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting field. Who's a dark horse candidate that we can think of?
Ooh, dark horse candidate?
I mean, besides
candidate?
Marcus Thornton, obviously.
Right, besides Marcus Thornton, maybe Melo.
Yeah, I think that's okay. I'm trying to think who else.
I don't think we can count Derrick Rose as a dark horse.
No, Derrick Rose is not a dark horse.
Tony Parker? Dark horse, I mean, Tony Parker's not going to get the votes, but...
No. He'll be a dark horse candidate again.
Steph Curry?
Steph Curry's a good one.
Dwight?
If the Warriors took number one in the West and Curry shot 44% from three and averaged like 27, you can get there.
I think even if he's putting up 24 a game, if they get the number one seed in the West, like that'll do it. Is Dwight a dark horse?
Yeah, Dwight's a dark horse because I don't think anybody expects him to be able to make the difference immediately.
Yeah, that's true.
Man, I watched – okay, granted, Memphis looked like absolute poo in their preseason, but – I watched that last Rockets preseason game. They can't deploy that Howard to Sheik combo a lot because of stretch fours. But if you don't have a competent stretch four to throw against them, oh my, it is terrifying. I was worried about how it would work, and then a Sheik bodied up Randolph, and Randolph's like, ha-ha, I have the edge. And then Dwight's like, no, you don't. Funny story. There is no edge. This line is lateral, and it goes on.
Oh, that's when you just have to make sure you have six big men on the roster and just hack them constantly.
Let's go to Rookie of the Year. So I thought I was being all sneaky. I was like, ooh, I'll go Ben McLemore. Yeah. And then, nope, three of us took him.
I already immediately regret not taking Oladipo. I think that's a lock now. I would have picked Trey Burke if he wasn't injured to start the year. But now I kind of feel like Oladipo's the guy.
I don't think he's a point guard, and I think that's going to be really tough for him.
I think they're just going to find him enough minutes as a guard.
I mean, I saw – and, like, I watched him in preseason, and I don't necessarily think his shot is spectacular. I think it's good. I think Oladipo is going to be a very good guard. I don't expect him to be a rookie of the year.
Here's the thing with McLemore, and he's going to score, which is typically all you need. I think with him, the key is going to be how many minutes will he get next to Grievous Vasquez, because he really can't play on the floor with Marcus Thornton and expect to get shots. No. And even Isaiah Thomas is not really a pass first point guard, maybe not even a pass second point guard. Doesn't mean he's not good, but you know,
he actually worked really well with him. I was shocked at this. So I saw some of the sets that they ran with those guys in a couple of preseason games. They ran an interesting thing where they had Isaiah out as point guard, but McLemore handled the ball coming up.
Yeah.
And it actually kind of worked, because they went through their initial set, and depending on what happened with that, they would just pass to Thomas, and then Thomas could make something happen. And I was like, ooh, I feel like he can have a real breakout early in the beginning. And if that happens, then they'll go ahead and make a move, and they'll be like, okay, we got the guard. Let's clear – now we can clear out some of this flotsam. Like, let's move Marcus Thornton. Let's get rid of some of these guys to make some room to make sure that we get McLemore enough minutes.
Where do you even put Marcus Thornton in trade spots? Like, who wants – because he's got 2 years left on his deal? Or is it just one?
Well, okay, I don't know this for sure. I would bet that Denver would be interested.
Yeah, that's not a bad destination, I guess.
I think who else has money? I mean, the Wolves have Kevin Martin, so they don't.
Yeah.
Let's get the Mavericks. Let's have Monta Ellis and Marcus Thornton on the same team.
I like it.
If Eric Gordon keeps getting injured, I could see that.
Ooh, what about the Thunder?
That'd be amazing. That'd be terrific. Everyone says that he's a bad defender. He is a bad defender because he has been in bad defensive systems, and he's limited to overcome that. But if you put him in a good defensive system, Marcus Thornton can be fine. He can be totally okay in a good defensive system.
Yeah, I think he. I mean, I think he can be neutralized with a good system.
Yeah, I'm never going to be like, oh well, there's this perimeter threat. Let's put Marcus Thornton on him. But
right.
You can find someone to match him up with. Like if you're playing the Heat. You're going to get killed by everyone else, but I would be like, all right, Thornton, go attack Chalmers. Go take
that.
Oh,
man, and when that guy gets hot,
yeah,
it is fun.
Yeah, and I mean, the Thunder could really use that kind of a scoring threat, right?
Yes.
And they've got young guys.
I'm all on board for the Marcus Thornton Thunder train.
Let's do this. Let's get Royce Young on the phone.
I'll call Sam Presti when we're done.
Who's like a dark horse rookie that we can talk about?
Ooh.
Well, I was okay. I was sold on CJ McCollum, man. I was gonna take him until the injury. I was really gonna take him and didn't care how insane people thought I was because of the minutes. I thought he was gonna be so good that he would earn minutes. That's how good I think CJ McCollum.
He is. He is a filthy offensive player. He's really good.
Ooh, you wanna know who I'm actually on board with now?
Who?
Cody Zeller.
Stop it! No, you're just trolling
me. No, I'm serious.
No, you're just trolling me.
I saw him in the Bobcats Knicks game make a move I did not think that he had. It was
what,
a really
lateral.
It was a really great pick and pop free throw line extended jumper. He actually pump fake got the guy in the air, got around him and made the score. And I was like, hey, look at you.
He's a basketball player.
So I'm actually getting really excited for the Bobcats like I do every year.
that'll end well. I think it sounds weird to say it, but Dark Horse is. Probably your number one pick, Anthony Bennett.
Yeah, dark horse.
I think he's got a great shot at like making a name for himself. Or maybe, I mean, Kelly Olynyk. Kelly Olynyk's going to score and he's going to rebound.
Everyone really, the coaches, it's here's an interesting one. This will be an interesting test. Because the coaches and his fellow players think that Kelly Olynyk is the next coming of Dirk Nowitzki. They think he's just going to be awesome.
Yeah, maybe. I'd pump the brakes on that a little bit. But
yeah, I don't see it. I still...
I think he's Carl Landry, and I think that's a really good value for where they drafted him in a terrible draft.
I mean, how many points do you have to score to win Rookie of the Year this year?
14, 15 a game. I mean, if he puts up 14 and – or let's say he puts up 15 and 7.
Oh, yeah.
That's got to be a lock, right? And I think he'll get the minutes for it. And he is effective – like, that's the thing. He can't defend at all. He's a duck in traffic. But he is a guy who can score, and he can hit the boards.
Yeah.
Even with his T-Rex arms.
Defensive player of the year, got some split on this.
Yep.
You and Royce both took LeBron.
I think because we both took Durant as MVP.
I don't think LeBron's ever going to get it, because too often, for too long, the vote has always been, let's reward a non-offensive guy for being good at defense. That's what the award has always been interpreted as by the voters.
Yeah, I mean, there are rare instances, like, you know, Jordan, Gary Payton. Yeah. But for the most part, it is a, hey, this defensive role player, let's award him.
Yeah. And I mean, it makes sense because that's their specialty. I think if you want to be the best player in the league at defense, you need to be probably a specialist that focuses on that.
Sure. I honestly think I am a big believer, as you know, in this game being recognized as a perimeter game now. And I think that we're going to shift towards perimeter defenders mattering as much as defensive players, just in terms of like how we view the league. And
how we view the league, or how the voters view the league?
I'm assuming we're eventually going to weasel our way into one vote. Like we're eventually going to get to vote for all rookies.
Well, Zach Lowe will vote for the right guy.
Well, yeah, Zach Lowe's really smart.
Zach Lowe will vote for the right guy, but that's one dude.
No, I think there's a trend where I really do think like there will be a point where we all, as a collective media, there will be stragglers, but there will be a point where we recognize, hey, these perimeter defenders matter. Even though they're not getting sexy block shots.
I think it's coming, but I think if that's coming, it's got to be somebody like Tony Allen, who's just...
I think LeBron's kind of the hybrid, though, right?
He's so disruptive. Tony Allen is just so...
LeBron's disruptive.
Well...
LeBron's disruptive at four positions.
Understand what I'm saying here. LeBron, I think, is actually a better defender than Tony Allen, okay?
Yes.
But if you're watching... LeBron's also not going to overextend himself because he's going to play within the construct of what the team defense should do. Tony Allen is just trying to kill whatever's in front of him.
Whether it's an opposing gunner or, you know, Grammer.
Yeah, just whatever's in front of him, he's going after.
Sure.
And that looks like it makes more of an impact, and that's still where we're at with defense, is metrics we can reliably trust. And so a lot of it just comes down to the eye test, and the eye test is severely flawed. So I still think Dwight's going to win it just because – and I think he'll deserve to, honestly, because even I think he'll win because of the – I think it'll be a long time before we get to the point where people will accept this is a perimeter league. I think that most people, if you were to talk about the three-point stuff that you and I discuss, a lot of people are going to interpret that as a fad, and I don't think it is, but I think that it can be interpreted as such. And I think that's going to impact it. And I also think that – I think Dwight's going to be really good. I think Dwight's healthy. And I think that when he's able to shut down the entire lane, it's going to really help things.
I mean, he's, what, a four-time winner? It's not like – I think it's impossible. I'm making a case for predictions in which, in full disclosure, I don't put a lot of thought into predictions because I actually think it's better when it's kind of a knee-jerk reaction. I think you're – at least for me, like my mind is more clear when that happens. And then when I start like overanalyzing it, especially for preseason, just because it's like, all right, Dwight Howard slips a disc in his back tomorrow. Well, now your prediction looks stupid. You know, that's kind of my point of like, it's, I'm fighting hard for this, but it's not like I'm saying LeBron is going to win Defensive Player of the Year.
I wish that the voter fatigue and the whole idea of, well, we need to give it to this guy because he's been in it so long, I wish that applied to Defensive Player of the Year, because I'd like to see Noah get one.
Yeah, Noah should be up there.
Roy Hibbert's the dark horse, right? Because nobody really understands how good he is at the rim.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd have to block like three and a half shots a game, because he looks... That's the thing, is like we're going off the eye test, which a lot of people do. Like, he looks awkward, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's really good and he's really effective, but it's never that aesthetically pleasing. Aside from that one block he had on Melo dunk in the playoffs, which is still that shot of his fingers just bent all the way back, and knowing that that's going to push the shot away, like that's incredible. But I think the aesthetics will kind of hurt Roy's chances. Although he would be a good dark horse, Noah should be a good dark horse. You know, Iguodala should be up there, but we've already talked about the perimeter thing.
I've also just accepted that no one will recognize Andre Iguodala's great defense. I don't know why, but after he didn't get first team all defense last year, I was like, I'm out. I'm done. I'm done. I tried. I failed. I'm moving on. I was thinking of somebody else. There's a couple of guys.
I mean, he's Iguodala's only made one all-defensive team.
I know.
That's unreal.
The all-defensive teams are the biggest joke in the league. In a league full of joke awards and joke voting, him getting only one all-defensive team, it's just stunning to me. You don't have to think he's as good as I think he is for you to recognize that the guy is an elite damn defender.
Yeah.
You know who actually is number two? I went through and put my top five. Number two on my list is actually Serge Ibaka.
Yeah, I like that.
I think that he's going to – my whole thing has always been with Ibaka whenever I've been clowning on him was just that everyone was only putting him up there because of his blocks and rebounds, and I was like, he's not a great technical defender and he's not a great team defender yet. But he's made real strides, and I think this year is probably when he's going to get there. I think he'll be really worthy of it if he gets – the Thunder – you could see – look, if the Thunder win a bajillion games, I could definitely see Durant getting MVP and Ibaka getting defensive player. That could definitely happen.
Yeah. Any chance Marc Gasol repeats?
No chance whatsoever. Okay. The biggest reason is actually because a bunch of players bitched about it when it happened.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because to me, he's really great, and that's pretty evident to anybody, but the players are the ones playing the game, so I'll give them credit for knowing what they're talking about, but they were really upset that Tony Allen didn't. They were like, it should have been Marc Gasol, and if it was a Grizzly, it should have been Tony Allen. Like, he wasn't even the best defender on his team. And they.
That's crazy.
And they're going to talk to the writers, and the writers will talk to the voters or be the voters. Right. And the voters will therefore not vote that way. So.
Dark horse, Tyson Chandler?
No, he's not even a dark horse. He's a non existent horse. He's a shit. He's a.
He's a pony?
Horse. He's a pony. I think a dark horse. I think Al Horford, I think, is really underrated defensively.
Yeah. Ooh, what about Josh Smith if they make the playoffs?
Yeah, that's a good. That's a really good dark horse candidate. That's a true dark horse candidate.
That is truly in the dark.
Well, I mean, it's not like Melo, who would be. That's like a blackout dark horse candidate.
That's. I think we need to go to a meeting.
Right. We need to call an emergency session and have some people brought to trial. Sixth man, we all have different votes.
I like it when we all have different votes.
Yeah, I don't like. Yeah, I was getting along. You think Scola is going to get enough minutes, shots, or production to get sixth man?
Oh, yeah. No Danny Granger.
He is out for 3 weeks. He's going to be
out for longer than 3 weeks.
You got a gun. It's a gunner. This is the gunner award.
Luis Scola is going to score, and they're going to be really good. That's what he does.
I like how I said that it's a gunner award, and none of us have a shooting guard.
Not a single shooting guard on there, which is probably a mistake. You know, J.R. Smith. Well, I guess J.R.'s going to start a lot, right? So he's probably not going to be there. Yeah. Nick Young might. We don't know how much he'll start.
Tim Berger apparently doesn't read anything on WarriorsWorld.com. So
why?
He took Harrison Barnes.
Barnes will probably come off the bench most of the year.
No, he will. But his confidence has also been destroyed, and he's playing out of position, which is going to be hard for him to get high production in. He could be good at that position, you know, but. I think it's going to be hard for him to get a lot of production. I don't think he's going to be able to score a lot of points or get a lot of rebounds or play to the level of impact on that team.
You also are not a big fan of Harrison Barnes as an NBA player.
Oh, no. I loved him out of college. I really loved what I saw of him last year. I was mad at the Warriors the entire year. I was like, why are you shopping for a small forward? Like, the rumors were constant from even before the draft that they wanted a veteran small forward. They couldn't find one, so they went ahead and took Barnes. And then Barnes is really good last year. The shooting percentages weren't great, but I really liked what I saw of him. I was like, oh,
he's going to be a great defender someday.
I hate this small ball idea. I hate it. I think it's a stupid idea.
I agree. I mean, why go with the trends of the NBA that seem to work, especially for a team that is so good?
Yeah, but you're confused, though. I can think that small ball can work for the Warriors, while I also think that it's going to be bad for Harrison Barnes. That's my assertion. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's crazy, but I guess it makes sense.
He's not going to be guarded by Tony Parker in the post every time like he was in that Spurs series that everyone cites as the reason to go with this. He's going to get guarded by bigger guys, and when he does, he's going to get the crap kicked out of him. He needs a couple more years of muscle. That's all I'm saying.
They're not putting him out there for 40 minutes a game at power forward. This isn't a line change. This isn't going by rotations in NBA 2K. This is going to be a fluid process.
Weren't you the one that was telling me his confidence has already been shook?
That's the reason he's out. I'm sorry, aka foot inflammation, but that doesn't mean he's a lost cause.
No, I don't think he's a lost cause. I just think this is going to be hard for him.
Of
I think
his career is hard. Great. It's NBA. The NBA is hard.
I think he's going to have a great career. I really do like Harrison Barnes. I was really high on him his freshman year. I wasn't as high on him the next year. I think he can really make a huge jump in year three and four of his career. I think he's going to be really good. I think he's going to be phenomenal. I think at some point the Warriors are going to be like, why do we have – we've got two unbelievably good small forwards, and we're going to have to pay them both a lot of money. What are we going to do here? I'm really big on Harrison Barnes.
When Reggie Jackson ends up starting 40 games for the Thunder, is that going to really destroy Royce's pick for Reggie Jackson?
It's probably going to hurt a little bit. I took Ryan Anderson.
Yeah, the Pelicans are going to have to be a playoff team for that to come through.
Don't understand. I think they're a lock at this point to me.
A lock to make the playoffs?
That's how good I think they're going to be. I'm on board, man. I don't know what happened. I got drunk on Pelicans juice this preseason.
I'm fine with you saying I think they can make the playoffs. Calling them a lock is insane.
All right, not a lock. Not a lock. You're right, because it's only like a four-game differential. I have a good feeling they're going to make the playoffs. Okay. And now they will have everyone get injured and we'll be terrible.
Anthony Davis is going to be like a priest now.
It's a tall priest.
Just a really tall unibrowed priest.
Weird-looking priest. No, I think Anderson probably should have gotten more votes last year. He was really good.
Yeah, I mean, they did give him an Most Improved Player award for no reason once, so that was cool. Maybe they'll give him Sixth Man.
I hate that, which is next, by the
way. Hey, speaking of.
Hey, Royce Young took Anthony Davis.
I love that pick. That's a good play. Good second-year players all get this all the time.
No, I know. That's why it's like the most obvious pick ever. I love it. I think it's genius. It's like the most obvious. It's like
the rest of us are trying to be cute with it.
I could not care less about this award.
Yeah. Who was the number one pick last year? Anthony Davis. All right, he's most improved.
Number one pick that didn't win Rookie of the Year last year.
Yeah.
Done. I like your Gordon Hayward pick too.
Yeah, I was actually going between him and Favors, and I just thought Hayward's going to have the ball in his hands a bunch, and I trust him with the ball in his hands, and I'm still not sold on Derek Favors. So, I think, how do I put this delicately? I think Gordon Hayward's makeup makes him more attractive to a lot of voters.
Yeah.
He's white. That's what I'm saying.
So you had it. You had the tact in your hand. And you just threw it out the window.
To be fair, it was in my hand for quite a few seconds.
Ken Berger's got Derek Favors. I don't like either of the Jazz guys because I think that there's going to be some growing pains associated. I think they're going to get a lot better, and I think that you're going to be able to see things and go, like, wow, they've really improved this year, and they are worth building around.
Yeah.
But I still think there's going to be enough growing pains that's going to be problematic. I've got JaVale just because the bar is set so low for him.
Yeah, if he has a good year, then
yeah,
he could run away with that.
Yeah, you talk about the narrative effect. How great is the narrative of going from Shaq to the Fool to Most Improved?
Oh, yeah.
You know, coach of the year should really just be Greg Popovich every single season. It just should be, because if you ask anybody, they all agree Greg Popovich is the best coach in the league.
He is. This is much like my annual Kevin Durant MVP pick, just until he wins it. Eric Spoelstra is my annual coach of the year pick until he wins it.
Yeah, he's not going to get it until after, unless he does well at the team that's not. Doesn't have LeBron. I think it's unfair. I think it's crap. I think that Eric Spoelstra is the most underrated part of the Heat's championship era with this team, but he's never going to get it. The voters, they're never going to reward him. They're never going to give him credit.
I'm going to keep picking until he does.
The voters are jerks about coaches.
They really are.
And then Doc's a really good pick by Royce.
Yeah. Because if that team wins, if that team gets the first seed in the West, that's probably a lock.
Well, and you get to say, like, first-year coach.
Right.
You know, and then, making DeAndre Jordan into something good would be a big help. And if Blake has a big year. I've got Tibbs just because they like repeat winners. This award tends to cycle through a couple of guys. And I think that if the Bulls wind up with the number one seed, which I think they definitely could, that there are a lot of people thought Tibbs should get last year for what he did. So you've got the delay effect plus the repeat factor. Plus, everyone has a high amount of respect for him to begin with, so I think that Tibbs could wind up taking this again.
Dark horse, Jerry Sloan.
Dark horse, Jeff Van Gundy. Dark Horse, Phil Jackson. Ken's got Monty Williams, which is a smart pick, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're a lock to make the playoffs.
Okay, I regret that. If I apologize, will you give me a break on that?
No, I'm done with that. I just wanted to throw that in there.
I just like them so much aesthetically. I don't know what happened. I just really like a lot of what they have now.
No, I like them too. I'm a little terrified of the idea of Tyreek Evans and Eric Gordon trying to share the ball.
It's all going to work out. Everything's going to be fine.
I think it's going to be really
fun. If Carmelo Anthony and J.R. Smith can share the ball, Zach, there is enough ball in the world for everyone.
I think it's going to be really fun for me. I don't know if that makes it fun for everybody else.
Executive of the Year, I feel really dumb. I didn't recognize that because Ken voted Billy King.
Yeah, that's probably the pick, right?
I was like, oh, I should have realized that. I never think that because I never think of Billy King as a good executive.
Exactly.
But you know, he pulled off that trade, and that's gonna be. I think that's gonna be enough building that team and turning them into a. And there's gonna be a lot of talk about last year and.
Yeah. Do you think that if he, let's say he wins it, fast forward 10 months and he's receiving the award, do they allow Prokhorov's checkbook to take the award? Does the checkbook make a speech? What go? How does that ceremony go?
And now to introduce Billy King as Executive of the Year, Mikhail Prokhorov's investment banker.
and now to accept the award, Mikhail Prokhorov's going to make it rain in here.
The lights go down. Russian techno pumps up.
Comes out in this Affliction shirt that's sparkling and neon.
What is he, Greg Doyle? I've got Dell Demps, so it's kind of a Berger had Monty Williams, and I took Dell Demps.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll. Well, I guess, yeah, they've made enough significant moves. They made two big ones with Tyreek and Drew. So if that happens, I mean, if they make the playoffs, those can be recognized as like, hey, look at what he did. I think they probably have to win 50 games, though, or close to 50, not 50, but close to 50 for him to get it.
Maybe you're right on that. That's probably a good point. I probably didn't think about that. You and Royce both have Daryl Morey, which is a really smart pick. He's probably going to deserve it. He will not win because the voters do not like the whole stats thing.
Yeah. I just put it out there because I thought, all right, who had the biggest acquisition? Dwight Howard. That's usually what wins.
Yep.
But you make a great point about the stats.
Do you want to do playoff predictions or do you want to skip that and just go to talking about the trade?
Ah, screw it. Let's do it.
Okay. So we did playoff predictions, and okay, here's the thought process that we did here. So I remember when Zach came on last year, he's like, why are we doing this? Like, why on earth would we possibly do this? And it comes down to, I mean, you see it, my thought, the reason we started doing it was whenever I would flip through preview magazines as a kid, they'd always have what they thought were going to be the playoff brackets, like right. They do it for the NFL and NBA.
Right.
And so I always thought it was fun. And again, this is supposed to be fun. It's okay. Like here's the thing. I got destroyed for my playoff predictions last year, and a lot of my preseason predictions wound up being right, and I nailed the finals. Now I was terrible in the playoffs, but it's okay. Like, you can make these predictions. It doesn't really mean anything. The best thing that you can do is to try and have fun with it. It's a conversation sparker. It's for people on Twitter to talk about, be like, oh, this guy had this thing. And it's not just for the negative and the outcry, because that's what people think is you're just trying to piss people off. I actually like it better when somebody's like, oh, hey, thanks for seeing that you think we're going to be pretty good. Like Clippers fans this morning, because I had the Clippers making the finals. They were right. Like, oh, hey, thanks for recognizing us. And that was nice. It's nice when people go, oh, you think we're pretty good. Like Bulls fans are used to me constantly underrating them, and I'm very big on them moment in time, so they're the number two seed right now.
Probably my favorite, one of my favorite moments of my short career so far has been in, oh god, what year was it? Maybe 2010-2011, I picked the Bucks to win the Central, because they had just come off that Bogut Jennings, John Salmons, like, magical second half run. They won, like, I don't know, 46 games or 47 games that year, something around that. And I thought, okay, if they win 51 games, that they can win the Central. It was before knowing that, like, Derrick Rose was going to be the MVP and all that stuff. And so I picked them to win the Central. And Bulls fans hated me that season. Like, hated me. Threw it in my face. Like, I even, like, got a couple of death threats throughout the playoffs. Like, it was a kind, I would say, a bit of an overreaction from some Bulls.
So that's saying Kill Bill. Yeah. I overreacted.
Right. And so my next year of making predictions, I strategically picked the Bulls to win the title, even though I didn't think they were going to do it, because I wanted to see the four-month turnaround. And I got an amazing four-month turnaround of people who I remembered previously saying how much of a joke I was, which is fair, coming to me in late October saying, I've always loved your work. You know, I think your predictions are great. That's what I love about predictions, is that it brings out that side of people to the point where, like, I don't think I did it this year. I think I actually just kind of did knee-jerk reactions. I didn't think about it. But there have been times in the past where I've thought, I'm going to pick this and see what people say. And it's not like I'm trying to get attention. It's I'm trying to see what this fan base will do.
The world is your little experiment. You're just toying with people. We all have the same 8 playoff teams in the East.
Do we?
Yeah.
Look at us.
And we all have the Pistons missing it.
Yeah. I don't like that team.
I can tell. Which is weird because you like Brandon. It does show. You dislike Josh Smith so much. It outweighs your like of Brandon Jennings.
I love Brandon Jennings. I love Andre Drummond. I love Monroe. I love KCP. I like a lot of those guys. Josh Smith just bugs me. I do. I will say this. I think Maurice Cheeks is a very good coach for that team.
Yeah.
And if they made the playoffs, I would not be shocked. I think the back end of the East is so mixed up that I even think in our win predictions, I had everyone kind of right there. I have the Pistons a couple of wins away from the Cavs, or one win away from the Cavs, who I have as the 8th seed. So it's
yeah, I took the complete chicken way out when after the trade on Friday. I was just like, nope, they're all getting 41 wins. 2 of them are going to make it in at random. And basically, I chose the Cavaliers to make the 8th seed because I want Heat Cavs in the first round.
Okay.
Because it'd be the most entertaining matchup. It would be by far the most entertaining matchup. Actually, I like all my playoff matchups. You got the Wizards Bulls in the first round,
yeah,
which would be a nice quick 4-1, but kind of nice, like John Wall's kind of learning experience, much the same way that Derrick Rose had to learn, you know?
Yeah.
He had a great first year versus the Celtics, but still. I've got Knicks Pacers in the first round, which would be phenomenal. And then
yeah,
Knicks,
I've got that too.
And then Pacers Heat,
yes,
in the second round would be great.
Yes.
You've got the Bulls Nets in the second round, which I would love a Bulls Nets rematch this year. That'd be a lot of fun. The West we're a little bit split on because I've got the Pelicans in there and not the Wolves. I don't know, man. I got really spooked by the defense.
I think I have them kind of tied. Yeah, I have them basically, or I have the Pelicans a couple wins behind them. It was hard for me to not put the Nuggets in. That was the tough one for me. And so I just decided, it'll be fun to say I predicted the Wolves make the playoffs if they make the playoffs. Like, that was just kind of like a me pick.
Yeah.
But I love my first round matchups. I've 8 with Spurs Wolves, which I think would be a very fun 4 or 5 games. I've got a Rockets Warriors first round matchup, a Thunder Blazers, and your favorite Pepto Whiskey Clippers Grizzlies.
Wait, you got the Warriors going down the first round?
To the Rockets, yeah.
Whoa!
I think the Rockets are a better team.
Wow.
Is that not?
I have the Warriors losing 4-2 in the second round to the Spurs.
Yeah, I've got them out in a 7-game series to the Rockets, and I think I just did that because of home court advantage.
I've got the Warriors beating the Grizzlies in the first round. We all have the Grizzlies being out in the first round. I am taking a beating in Memphis right now. It is. Grizzlies fans are not happy with me. They think I am bad things. It is not good. Do we all have the Blazers making it? So Blazers, yes. Wolves were split on, but 2-1, yes. Pelicans, I'm the only one. None of us have the Lakers.
No. I think when we found out that Kobe will not start the season, that was kind of like if he was going to come back and be great into the playoffs, I think it had to happen right away. Yeah. Right?
You want to wrap up and we'll talk about the trade?
Yeah, let's do that.
So, trade on Friday.
There was a trade on Friday.
While you were talking to Ethan Sherwood Strauss about dogs playing defense.
It was.
I enjoyed the podcast. We need an intervention for Ethan. It is.
Oh my God, so much so.
It's too far. It's
the,
just too
the
far.
Idea that a border collie could play NBA defense. It's just insane.
I want him to seriously bring this question to Andre Iguodala and see what he says about it. Like, because he thinks so little of perimeter defense in the NBA. Like,
I want him to ask David Lee if he thinks a Border Collie could defend him.
I just have this image of Lee grabbing him, and David Lee doesn't seem like a monster guy, but when you meet him, he's a pretty big dude.
It's a
and
gigantic.
Slamming him into the ground like the Hulk does with Loki in the Avengers, just like slamming him into the ground repeatedly. Puny hipster.
This trade between the Wizards and the Suns was the reason I put them in the playoffs. I didn't have them in the playoffs before. I had somebody else. And that was enough for me. I was like, and so when they made the trade, it's like, all right, you had maybe 2 or 3 months of Emeka Okafor at best, and now you're getting most likely, you could assume, like 5 months of Marcin Gortat. Like, that's enough of an upgrade for me when I had such concerns about their interior. About their interior depth because of Okafor's injuries, and that was enough for me to be like, all right, I think they're going to make the playoffs.
I actually started hedging over the weekend and kind of wish I thought about changing it this morning, but didn't want to put our producer through the pain of having to readjust my thing, my bracket. I mean, Gortat makes them better. There's no question about that. I actually think he's probably an upgrade on Okafor at this point because he's got more of an offensive game.
Okay, I could see that.
I'm a little concerned just from the perspective of I started thinking. So many guys had good years for them at the end of the year last year. What if all that stuff doesn't go right? That's how it is with all three of those East teams.
Yes, Pistons, absolutely.
Four of them, really, with the Raptors. They all have to have so much stuff go right for them.
Be even able to throw the Bucks in there.
Yeah, I'll go that route. If Larry Sanders makes a jump, I'll say that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think John Henson's gonna be really good. But yeah, I mean, to your point that. It's really like a coin flip between, you know, four or five teams.
I mean, they're two injuries away from. I mean, every team is two injuries away. I'm just saying they have more injury problems than looking at, you know, let's say Wall's even healthy. Wall, who's their backup two?
Backup two is Glenn Rice Jr.
Yeah, Glenn Rice Jr., Trevor Ariza, Booker, and Gortat. Ugh, I mean. So that's why I started hedging. But I go back on it, and just from the perspective of the trade, I think it was really good. And I actually – they protected it well. I like that the Suns – I think it's really smart what the Suns did, not just from the tanking perspective, but also I think they have the potential, depending on how the playoff – how the seedings work out, they can get 4 picks next year.
Yeah.
Holy crap. That's a lot of draft picks.
It's not
year.
Yeah, it's not inconceivable that the Pistons, Wizards, and Wolves make the playoffs. And if they do, that's 4 picks. And I mean, it's not like these guys are gonna be 4 seeds. Like, it's probably 4 top 20 picks.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. That's some general managing.
That is some that is some managing in a general manner.
Officially.
Yeah, I thought that it was so I thought it was a good trade for both sides. You gave them both A's. You gave the Wizards an A-, I think.
Yeah, just because of the first round pick, and you know, I'm not convinced Gortat is a good enough center to anchor a defense, but he is a good center, you know.
I think maybe the concept is if our team defense is conceptually good enough, it can make up for some of the limitations of the defense. So even if the defense isn't great, if we can just get the offense to be, I think part of that may be the plan, and that's kind of similar to the Timberwolves, right? Where we got to be able to the offense, we're going to have to be able to. We got to be able, if we're going to make it, we're going to have to come in as a low seed. And typically speaking, the Bucks are kind of a difference in the last couple of years, but most of those lower seeds are made up of good offensive teams that are pretty bad defensively.
Yeah.
So I think that's maybe the gap.
Boy, Wizards fans are pissed about it because of the first round pick. It's like you're giving up on cheap talent, and I'm just thinking. At this point, I don't know why you would trust Ernie with a first round pick.
Right.
Like, Bradley Beal worked out. Fantastic. But good God. Look at that team. Look at the first round picks they've made. And I think that I just think that with that team, if Beal is really good and if Wall is really good and they sneak into the playoffs in the 8th seed or the 7th seed, whatever. It's just so much easier to sell free agents on, look at these two young players we've got, and we made the playoffs last year. Come play with us. They're going to go out and get LeBron or Carmelo, but like their next move is adding. I think they have a better chance of making the playoffs and adding an important enough player in free agency in 2014 as opposed to getting a top 11 pick to, you know, join this team and make, even in a loaded draft. Like, I feel like they're if you're going to execute a plan, you've got to commit to it. And I think this is committing to it. And I actually think it's a decent plan for them. You and I have talked about this, especially with Al Jefferson signing with the Bobcats. At a certain point, you have to say, trying to acquire assets is not working. We have to figure out how to win.
And not everybody can follow the same model.
Exactly. Not every model works for everybody. And I think the response is, well, then we should get rid of Ernie. We should get rid of, you know, the front office. Yeah, go for it. Convince Ted Leonsis that that's the move. If you can do that, then I'm with you on this thought process. But if this guy's going to be around, you've got to adjust and maximize his capabilities. And I think that's maximizing it.
You want a crazy idea?
I'm in.
So they got 37 on the books for next year if they decline all of their options, which is they'll have to keep Beal. So that's going to be like 41. But that's Porter, Vesely, or not Porter. It's Vesely, Serafin, Booker, Maynor, Singleton. If Maynor opts out, which probably will. Now, that's some talent, but that's not anybody that you are not unwilling to get rid of.
Right.
What do they make a play for Bosch?
Love it. I love that idea.
You're talking about a small ball approach with Nene and Bosch, but I would actually try and target and move Nene for a center. And then you've got Chris Bosch still very much in his prime with John Wall.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh!
That's not bad.
Ooh, yeah. Ernie on the phone. Trade some more draft picks. So before we go, I want to run down a quick – I've got some over-unders on offensive and defensive efficiencies I want to throw right now.
Let's do it.
Okay. Houston Rockets, last year their defensive efficiency was a much more respectable than I thought, 103.5. Let's put their offensive efficiency this year at 101.5 – or defensive efficiency at 101.5, rather.
The Rockets?
Yeah.
Okay.
Over-under. That puts them in an elite category.
Yeah. I'm going to go under.
Okay. I'm going to take them. I'm going to go over. The Hawks were at 101.8 last year, and that's about where I expect them to be. I think they'll be between 101.5 and 102.5.
Okay.
Somewhere in the range. Their offensive efficiency last year was at 107.7. Can they – they're over-under. I'll put it at 108.5.
Under.
Really?
I think it's going to be awkward to fit Dwight in for the first month or two.
I said Clippers, not Rockets.
Oh, Clippers. Oh, I think it's the Rockets. I'm still in the Rockets. Clippers, 108.5?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's over. 109.2. Like, they're going to be stupid good on offense.
Okay. Rockets were at 106.7 last year, which is lower than I thought it was. And I was off on the Rockets. Let's put theirs at 107.5.
Under.
You think it's going to take some time?
Yeah, I think it'll take a little time. I think defensively you'll see impact right away. But I think offensively, you know, if you put their second half – at 107.5, I'd probably take the over. But I think the first half will just be a little awkward.
I'll go over. They had the highest offensive efficiency in preseason, which means nothing. But I do think that at least gives you enough of a trend. I think that McHale was able to build a good enough offense last year, and Harden's so efficient just with his ability to draw free throws that I think he'll be able to get the offensive efficiency up to a decent number. Now Howard's going to hurt that. But
I also think, like, if they are going to put Ashik and Howard together for 10 minutes a game – I think it's going to be a problem, not defensively, but just offensively. Like, that's that they have to change their game plan completely when that happens.
All right, Los Angeles Lakers.
Oh boy!
Last year, their defensive efficiency was a 103.6 mark. I'm going to put them this season, and we'll give them an over under of 106 flat.
Over.
I agree. Over. The worst in the league last year was the Bobcats at 108.9. That was partially skewed by a couple of games where the Bobcats just got the Thunder game.
Oh, God.
The blood. So much blood. But the Kings were at 108.6. I think the Lakers will probably be about 107.8 or 9. So.
Yeah, I don't know if I think it'll be that high, but I think it'll be over 106.
Detroit Pistons last season had an offensive efficiency of 100.9.
Oh, my God.
100 points per 100 possessions. 100.9. I'll put their offensive efficiency with a substantially upgraded in terms of firepower big names. I will put it at 102 flat.
Jesus. This one you're just screwing with me. I'll go over.
102 puts them between the Grizzlies and Hornets last year.
I'll go over.
Ooh.
I'll give them a 102.1.
I'll take the under. I think they'll top out at about 100.5.
Okay.
I think it'd be similar to what they were last year. Boston Celtics last year had another stellar mark defensively at 100.4.
Okay.
One of the best in the league. That was actually 100.4 was they were sixth in the league last year in defensive efficiency.
Okay.
This year, I will put their over under for defensive efficiency at 105.5.
Whew. They got Avery Bradley. He can defend a little bit. That's got to be over.
First year head coach coming over from college. No Rondo.
Sullinger, Bass, Olenek.
That's their guys at the rim.
Created player, Vitor Favaroni. Favaroni, I don't know. He looks, I mean, come on. He looks like just about every created player that 2K Sports has ever put out in a media release.
Yeah.
He looks exactly like him. Yeah, that's a... Yeah, they got to be like a 106, right?
Yeah. Chicago Bulls last year had 100.3 defensive efficiency. I'm putting their over-under this year at 98.
Whew! That's low.
Two teams were better than that last year.
Yeah, that is not a lot of points. What did the Pacers finish at, like 96-something?
96.6.
That's just disrespectful.
96.6. For those of you that are going, what are they talking about? I'm trying. That means that on every possession, like finishing with less than a point per possession is one thing. But when you start to, when you chipped off nearly, what, 0.5? It's per 100. That's crazy. That's just crazy.
It's really insane. 98 for the Bulls. Yeah, I'll go under. I'm so in on this Bulls team, which I know is going out on a limb, but
okay. And then, how high would you go if I put it at 96? Can they break 96?
No, they're not going to break 96, but I think they're comfortably around 97.
Comfortably around 97. Okay. Yeah. Grizzlies offensive efficiency last year was 101.7. I'll put it at 102 flat.
They haven't changed. I'll go under.
Under again?
Yeah. Just because I don't know what the coach is going to be like.
Yeah. Denver Nuggets last year had a 102 defensive rating, which nobody would listen to me when I tried to scream from the heavens. And showed up definitely in the playoffs. I'll put their defensive efficiency this year at 104.5.
Ooh, that's just high enough to make me think.
Yeah. It's almost like I used to do this in my spare time.
I'm going
to
go slightly under.
I will go over.
Way over.
I think the Nuggets rather are going to be a train wreck for maybe the first 2 months of the season. I think Shaw's going to get this team right. I think that long term this team's going to be okay and it's going to be good. They have some talent. There are a billion things that are setting off red alarms when I'm reading the coverage of this team. I haven't been down for practice because I had to take care of my kid last week for the last preseason game, and I do too much to be able to make it down for practice, but. Chris Dempsey, who covers the Post, has got some stuff up, which isn't – he's not saying it's negative. It's just talking about comments. Ty Lawson was flipping out last game about what the bigs were doing, about them not knowing, about not being prepared. There's just a – Wilson Chandler still hurt. There's just a billion things to worry about.
Not being prepared. JaVale McGee, Kenneth Faried, and J.J. Hickson we're talking about.
Well – you can't say Freed's not prepared. That's the thing about Freed. He comes Freed's out and he wants to kill every single game.
Yeah, that's true. I retract the Freed part.
Yeah, they don't seem like they're paying I think his quote was something about how we do the same things over and over again in practice and then we don't do them in the game. I'm worried. Yeah. I worry about Ty Lawson's patience this year. He's watched Carmelo Anthony come and go, Andre Iguodala come and go.
Over under for Ty Lawson, 1.5 drifters killed. After a home loss. Let me clarify that for handicap purposes. 1.5 drifters killed. I might go over.
If he finds two of them together, there's good odds,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. There's your bet right there if he gets two together.
One more. Golden State Warriors had a 104.2 offensive efficiency last year. That was pretty high. That was good for...
11th?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I'll put the over under for this year at 107.5.
Under. Way under.
Really?
Tony Douglas is their backup point guard. I like Tony Douglas, but they lost a lot on that bench in terms of reliable, consistent offensive. Like, Jarrett Jack was a train wreck in the postseason, but he was so good during the regular season.
Yeah.
I actually like the idea of starting Barnes and Iguodala on the wings and bringing Klay Thompson off the bench, which some Warriors have freaked out at that idea. But I think, like, you're balancing the squads a little bit better that way. I love Klay's game, and I that's what I would do personally. Mark Jackson obviously knows a lot more about basketball than I do. But, I think their bench is going to be a problem.
I think Thompson's good enough to be the offensive weapon off of the bench. He can anchor an offense coming off the bench. I love that idea. Yeah. I think that's a superb idea. And I think you can sub out Barnes and bring in Thompson, and then that way you still got the lineup that you wanted originally.
Yeah.
I think that works out a lot better for everybody. And I think Barnes would really excel. I think if you give him confidence, he can be really great.
Yeah, you throw that start. Some of those guys really does matter if you put a starter label on them.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy mental thing. That
coaches don't get it. Coaches are always like, "Why do you care? Like,
yeah,
I'm gonna play you at the end of the game." But
yeah, but it's that star label, and I just think that Klay is just like that. If Klay Thompson was coming off the bench this year, and I knew he was coming off the bench all year, he'd be my sixth man pick.
Yeah,
yeah. He's. I mean, I just think he would be perfect in that role.
Okay, man. That's it. This is our last podcast without having games to talk about.
I know. Tomorrow. I guess we'll talk some more preview. We'll preview the games. We'll go over odds. How about that?
We get to talk about odds, and I'll make my picks. They'll be wrong. I'm so excited to be wrong. It's gonna be great.
You got hot for a while last season.
I got red hot for a while, and nobody was tracking it. So we got that fixed this year. I'm hoping I can go on another run. I was blazing hot for a stretch there in the middle of the season. I'm hoping I can get out. I'm hoping just to stay above the 40% line. And if you do that, you're pretty good. I'm hoping to stay about 40%, but. Yeah, we'll have lots of stuff for you tomorrow. I'm going to have a history of the Bulls-Heat rivalry, the modern one. Zach's going to have a thing on what Derrick Rose's return into the league. Ken Berger is in Chicago. He'll be covering and bringing you live up for in advance of – or in Miami, rather, in advance of tomorrow. And, yeah, man, we got NBA back.
I'm excited. Thanks, Matt.